vulnerable to these designs, but the pulls are really amplified for teens because of where they're at developmentally.
You're listening to the Mindful Mama Podcast, episode number 372. Today, we're talking about screens, what parents are missing, with Emily Weinstein and Carrie James. Welcome to the Mindful Mama Podcast. Here, it's about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. At Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have, and when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm your host, Hunter Clark Fields. I help smart, thoughtful parents stay calm so they can have strong, connected relationships with their children. I've been practicing mindfulness for over 20 years. I'm the creator of Mindful Parenting, and I'm the author of the best-selling book, Raising Good Humans, a mindful guide to breaking the cycle of reactive parenting and raising kind, confident kids. Hey, welcome back to the Mindful Mama Podcast. So glad you're here. If you haven't done so yet, hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you've ever gotten any value from this episode or this podcast in general, please do me a favor, go to Apple Podcast and leave us a rating and review. And it just helps the podcast grow more. It takes a few seconds, maybe a minute, and it makes a huge difference. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Hey, this is a really cool episode, part of a little screen mini series, technology mini series to go with episode number 370 with Dr. Victoria Dunkley. And today I'm sitting down with Drs. Emily Weinstein and Carrie James, Harvard-based researchers and authors of the new book, Behind Their Screens, What Teens Are Facing and Adults Are Missing. You may have listened to episode number 370 or hear the sensational news about tech stories and want to run away to a cabin in the woods with no internet and devices for your kids, right? Can there be any good news about kids and tech? So I'm so excited to give you this conversation with Emily Weinstein and Carrie James, the authors of Behind Their Screens. And I found out that there are actually hidden benefits to tech and that the conversation should be much more nuanced and there's a lot of complexities. So we adults can get more curious and open-minded about kids and tech, and that's what we are going to do in this episode. So join me at the table as I talk to Emily Weinstein and Carrie James.
Are you struggling with kids fighting, yelling, and more despite listening to the podcast and reading all the books? Parenting can be so overwhelming and exhausting. You know, I see you and I have something that will help. Mindful Parenting SOS. I'm offering free live mindful parenting sessions starting Monday, May 6th. Basically, live mindful parenting lessons that you'd normally have to pay for. So if you struggle with getting your kids to listen, tantrums, misbehavior, and feeling the guilt of yelling at your kid, then you should definitely get your spot in Mindful Parenting SOS. I'll be there to answer your questions in person, and if you can't make it, we will have replays available. Don't wait to get your spot now. It's free. Go to mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS to register. That's mindfulmamamentor.com/SOS. I can't wait to see you there.
So I'm excited about your book, Behind Their Screens, because you started with the idea that we have been misled. And we have had researchers come or psychologists and researchers come on this podcast and tell us, you know, how damaging screen time can be for kids, especially kids who have issues and challenges like ADHD and OCD and all these different challenges. And that the amount of time that they're on screen time is really can be hugely damaging. But you start your books telling us that a lot of the research is alarmist, that we have to kind of dive in a little deeper to understand this. So tell us about where you're coming from and what you discovered.
Okay, well, I'm Emily. So I'm a psychologist. Carrie's a sociologist. We're longtime researchers of this topic. We've been doing research on teens and screens for over a decade. We're also both moms, so we have a vested personal interest in this topic, and we recently had this amazing opportunity to work on a study where we collected perspectives from more than 3,500 middle and high schoolers across the United States, living in very different contexts and communities, and they had very different perspectives on social media and screen time and cell phones. And this book is really about revealing what they had to say that they felt like they most wish adults understood. And we had so much fun working alongside youth and really breaking down for adults what's myth, what's reality, and how to use the research to have better conversations with the teens in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned a moment ago, Hunter, that that there's so much out there that's alarmist about the conversation around teens and tech. And it was just really helpful to slow our research down and to partner with young people to really hear from them about their experience. Emily made reference to this, but we recruited a youth advisory council. So we had young people working with us every step of the way to try to make sense of the data. And that just really brought us into the details in such an important way. The other thing I'll say is you mentioned like there's this alarmist discourse. A lot of it is often about screen time. And there are a couple of things that we learned that are really powerful when you really tune in to the particular and tune into details. And one is that screen time doesn't capture key differences in terms of what teens are doing on their screens, or like differences across a given amount of time that they're on their screen and the kinds of activities they're engaging in. So we often use this blanket terminology of screen time when we look to reduce it without zooming into what are some of the details. And that's one way in which listening to teens shed light on what was happening. But the other piece is that teens are really different in how they're feeling or responding to the different things that they're doing on their screens. And so teens are not a monolith. They react differently. Some of them get sort of sucked into highlight reels and walk away from a time on Instagram feeling really lousy, and others have a different feed where they have pursued interests and the algorithm is supporting those interests and they walk away feeling really good. So that's just to bring you into the ways in which talking with teens and hearing more about their perspectives and zooming into the particular helps us sort of calm down some of the panic about screen time.
I know, actually, sometimes when I panic about my daughter, and she'll be like, but mom, I was researching, like, you know, she really was like researching the kind of fish that she should have in her goldfish in her tank and the water and the acidity and all of these things. Like, she's actually like, I mean, her YouTube feed is filled with like fish people and horse people. So I get a little worried, and then I when I listen to her, when I talk to her, I hear, you know, I hear a story that is a little reassuring for me.
And exactly what you said, paying attention to what she's actually doing during that screen time and how she's feeling as a result of it, that is one of the key things that we found is just so important. And one of the things that's happened is that there is just this incredible, strong cultural narrative around the idea that just screens are bad. And I think many parents get in this loop of feeling like we should feel guilty whenever we're letting our kids be on screens, and that the goal should be essentially wait as long as possible to get your kid a screen and then have them use as little as possible, hold out as long as you can. And gosh, like, there are complications of that approach too. And this is not a book about the fact that we can be so reassuring and there are no problems. I mean, the whole book is about the things that are hard for teens. But mm-hmm. What we found was that actually the things that are hard are not necessarily the things that most adults assume. And that when we move beyond the screen time conversation, we actually get to pay attention to the difference between an hour of screen time where a teen is researching their goldfish tank or learning how to nail a skateboard trick, and an hour of screen time where they're feeling really jealous of everyone else's summer vacations or looking at really depressing content that's clearly bringing them down and having a negative effect. And those differences matter so much. And so when we just gloss over them by saying, okay, 1 hour of screen time or 2 hours of screen time, we miss too much of what's going on in our kids' lives behind their screens.
So I get that, and I want to be like, yes, but then I worry about screen time for me, right? Like, I'm an adult, and my, you know, and I worry about, you know, am I getting sucked into my device too much? Am I not connecting with my peers too much? Like, I worry about the other adults. Like, when I go to the bus stop sometimes, like, to pick up my daughter, instead of the adults hanging out, who, you know, it's a, you have to drive there, they're talking to each other, they're all in their cars looking at their screens, and I find that sad and pathetic. And it's like, I worry that it's hurting us too. So if it's hurting us with kids whose brains are not as fully developed, you know, is there are harms that can come to them too.
Absolutely. We are all pulled to our screens. We know the pull. I mean, I remember during the pandemic and when we were all at home together, homeschooling, my husband and I both working, and at the end of the workday, my 12-year-old would come and try to pull me away from my computer. And I just wanted to do one more thing. And I mean, we all feel that. And it's really important to realize what are the particular features of apps and the technologies we use that make it so hard to pull away. I mean, social media companies are very savvy at building in features like infinite scroll to make sure you never get to the end of a newsfeed, or notification. There's notifications. There's a reason why they're red flags rather than blue or green, because red flags are really, you know, kind of alarming and you want to get rid of it. You want to see, and you also, it taps into that neural response and curiosity. Like, I want to know who sent me a message. It could be something really, really important. So we're all vulnerable to these designs. But the pulls are really amplified for teens because of where they're at developmentally, because they're primed to be so concerned about connection with their peers. And that's normal and important. They're concerned about validation from peers. And so we just really have to understand that the collision of tech with their developmental stage makes it even harder for them to pull away.
There's another thing that you named in your comment that is really worth calling out and that we talk about in the book, which is this idea of what researchers sometimes call technoference, when technology is actually interfering with the qualities of our connections with one another and with our relationships. And one of the key questions, when we say we have to move beyond screen time, it doesn't mean that the time we're spending doesn't matter. It means we have to get more specific about things like, what are we doing on our screens? What are we not doing because we're on our screens? And how are we feeling as a result of it? What is an individual kid bringing to their screen experience that's maybe getting amplified? That's like the examples you were mentioning earlier, like their own vulnerabilities and how those might be magnified. Those are all very real. And actually, it's not, we don't want to overlook those. In fact, what we want to do is look at them much more intentionally and recognize that there are times like technoference is absolutely crucial for us to pay more attention to. There are research studies pointing to the impacts it has on the quality of our parent-child relationships, on the qualities of our connection with our friends and our romantic relationships and partners. And teens are super aware of this. We talk in this book about this idea of the digital pacifier, which was something that teens were telling us about, which was this idea of using your device for almost a kind of self-soothing. Because when you're in a social situation and you feel kind of awkward and you don't really know how to start a connection with someone or start a conversation, it's easier to just pull out your device and look like you're busy instead of look like you're awkward. And of course, this completely backfires in the sense that if I'm on my phone like this, you know, if I have my phone right in front of my face, it's even less likely that someone is going to approach me and start a conversation. And I've just made myself less accessible, not more. So that's kind of your example of the car line. I think that's a kind of screen time that is worth paying attention to because it's displacing the connection that you might otherwise have with other parents in the car line, maybe a moment of calm for yourself, of kind of your mind wandering through other topics. And that really does matter.
You know, one thing that we haven't named as we've talked, we've we've gotten pulled in to this conversation about digital habits is one of the big revelations from talking to teens is they actually worry about their digital habits too. So like listening to them and, you know, it was much easier for them to tell us because we're not their parents and we weren't poised to take their devices away. But they told us things like the app TikTok runs my life, or I can't seem to pull away from social media. They really recognized that this was hard and they didn't want to feel dysregulated. They don't want to feel like their habits are out of control. And so understanding that, like laying bare some of the real tensions that teens feel, tapping into that, I think allows us, we often say that we're in an us versus them battle with our kids over screens. But if we recognize that we're all feeling worried about that pull, then we can convert that to an us and them battle. And so we can roll up our sleeves and think together about how to combat the pull of the screen. And we have some particular things that we've learned about ways adults can go about this. I'll just name one thing and then, you know, maybe Emily can give voice to some other. Well, one is to actually talk about some of those persuasive design features we were talking about a moment ago, like infinite scroll and notifications. There's actually talking about those features and highlighting them is actually an evidence-based practice. We have a couple of colleagues who ran a really interesting study where they talked with teens about persuasive design features, revealing the things that social media companies build into apps, but they also connected that conversation to values. They aligned that discussion with the kinds of values that teens hold dear. And making those connections was really important. Adolescents don't want to feel duped. You know, they're really keen or keenly aware of when someone's trying to manipulate them and undercut their sense of autonomy, which is a key value, or they value justice and fairness. And the idea that a social media company is trying to trick them, tapping into that sense of unfairness can really embolden or motivate teens to address some of those habits, especially if we know that deep down, they are really worried about these things.
That's hopeful for me because I did make my daughters watch the documentary about social media that came out last year that I'm blanking on the name of it now, but I did say.
The Social Dilemma.
The Social Dilemma, yes. I did say you have to watch this to educate them. And, you know, they grumbled a bit, but I'm glad that they are, at least we had this information and that you know, that information about the persuasive design and things like that, because it sounds like what I'm hearing from you guys is that it's similar to so many aspects of parenting where we don't want to get into that us versus them battle. You know, that never helps anybody. It just creates resistance, and then you lose your influence, right? The more you use your power, you lose your influence. And so we want to stay on the, we're on the same team side, and then be able to use our influence for positive, you know, for the good. I mean, that said, right, like there are maybe some boundaries that we want to hold. You guys are parents. Do you have boundaries around tech, around phones and things like that you have with your kids or that you recommend after having all these conversations with teens?
Parents, we have to stop the sleep deprivation thing. It is not good for us and is not good for our kids. And you know what is the loveliest form of self-care is that you make a beautiful, inviting bed with incredible bedding. And that's why I love that Cozy Earth is the sponsor of the Mindful Parenting podcast, because Cozy Earth offers bedding products that will transform your sleep. These sheets are so high quality, so soft. They would just be the cure to some sleep deprivation, I swear. Cozy Earth bedding is temperature regulating. It has superior softness, unparalleled fabric, materials, and weave. It has real quality and longevity. All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. Incorporating Cozy Earth products into your self-care routine can enhance your sleep quality and your overall wellness. Treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear, and prioritize your self-care and sleep health. You deserve it. The promo code that we have just for our listeners is MINDFUL35 for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Cozy Earth is soft as a mother's touch. Honestly, treat yourself. Go for a really incredible sleep and bedding. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use the promo code MINDFUL35 for an exclusive 35% off. Soft as a mother's touch, Cozy Earth wishes you a happy Mother's Day. I want to tell you about a great podcast that you should check out, especially if you ever deal with any school system, which you probably do. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortubé, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. And this season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP and busts common myths about special education. So I checked out the episode on the difference between IEPs and 504 plans because my daughter Maggie uses a 504 plan, and it was really, really helpful. It went over all the differences, which one's better, how to get them, different myths and what your rights are, all kinds of different things that you should understand if your child may need extra help in education through an IEP or a 504 plan. The tone is super helpful, friendly, and smart. I highly recommend you check it out. To listen to Understood Explains, just search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's it. Understood Explains.
Emily, do you want to jump
yes,
in?
Yes, is the short answer. Okay, I'll start first. So Carrie and I, while we were doing this research, I'll just say we're parenting kids from 0 to 17. So we have had the whole kind of spectrum of child development in our own household as we've been doing this. And I'm at the younger end of the spectrum. So I'll talk a little bit about the early childhood stage and then pass to Carrie for the tween and teen boundaries. So I'll say the first thing, which actually is relevant to early childhood, but also throughout development, is that an uncomfortable truth is that we have to take a really hard look at our own tech habits and what we're modeling to our kids around the ways that we interact with devices. I could not believe from the earliest ages, my daughter was so aware of when I was distracted by my phone, of when my eyes were on the screen. And this is actually something that is borne out by other research studies. You can watch these videos of these paradigms where kids watch, are looking on, trying to get their parents' attention while the parents' eyes are glued to the phone. And it's hard to watch. It feels painful. It's like kind of the evolution of what was like early attachment research, if listeners are familiar with that. But imagine just like looking on at this little baby, like trying so hard to get their parents' attention and the parent just eyes on the screen. And the truth is that a lot of us, I think, fall into that category at one time or another where we're distracted and we're not connecting because of it. So the first thing is that engaging with this research made me take a really hard look at my own habits and recognize that the pull of the screen is really strong and that sometimes it undercuts the intentions and values that I have around the kind of parent I want to be, which is present and engaged, especially like connecting with my family. So I started noting moments and times of the day when I was really vulnerable to falling into the kinds of tech habits that I didn't want. One example is bedtime in my house. Like when it goes on into, you know, the second hour of resistance and story, 52 stories, I would find that I would start to get kind of curious, like what came into my email inbox, and maybe I'm getting a little frustrated, and I would all of a sudden just like be like, oh, I'll just quickly check my email. But I really don't want to be a parent who is doing bedtime with little kids checking my phone and being on email. And so I realized that if I wanted to resist that pull, it actually wasn't enough to just say, I'm not going to check my phone. I had to leave my phone downstairs or outside of the bedroom so that it was not physically within my arm's reach. And that's just an example of recognizing, like, we know the design features are powerful and the pull of the screen is strong. And so we have to make like behavioral changes to our setup to align our family life with the kinds of things we want for it. That's just one example for me. Carrie, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. I think that's so important, I want to thank you for that example because it's so practical and that we think we have this like all-encompassing willpower and I can just be like, oh yeah, I won't pay attention to it. But we have to get real with ourselves. Like, no, I actually, you know, need to leave it downstairs. So, you know, I'm not like, you know, all our phones in our house are downstairs at night. So nobody like gets up and is like, oh, let me look at this thing, right? Like, we have to be practical about our limitations.
And Hunter, we can actually level up the impact of those kinds of changes when we name them out loud and we kind of narrate our thought process, especially as kids get older. Naming the pull we feel and then the strategy we're using to try and mitigate it and our value is actually a way to help our kids develop mindful awareness about normalizing the pull of the screen and then normalizing the fact that we all have to take steps to manage life with this. So even with my three-year-old, I'll now say like, oh, wow, I'm feeling really distracted by my phone today, but I really want to focus on this game. So let me go put it in the, you know, in the kitchen, or let me put it on airplane mode. And she doesn't have a phone and she doesn't really know what airplane mode is, but I want her to grow up knowing that it's okay to feel the pull, but it's also really important for us to do things that help connect and make sure that we're avoiding the technoference as much as we can.
I love that. Thank you.
So what Emily shared, even though my children are older, so I have a 12-year-old, she'll be 13 in December, and a 17-year-old, some of what Emily has named is still really relevant. Okay, so the one thing I'll say is that, you know, my kids, as I just named, are different ages, and age really matters in terms of like how much parental monitoring I have felt is appropriate. Emily and I are big fans of the principle of gradual release. As kids generally get older, the idea that, you know, they deserve more privacy and autonomy. And so it may start out that you're doing much more oversight. The key thing is that you're letting them know, like, yes, I'm going to take your phone and I'm going to look at your messages. Being really transparent about what you're doing for oversight and why is really, really important. Knowing that this is an open conversation and we're going to revisit this as time goes on, as you get older. So age is one element of it. But the other thing is tuning into your kids' areas of vulnerability and their strengths and just sort of who they are. My kids are not only different in age, but they're really different kids. So my younger kid is, she doesn't communicate, you know, very openly. She's really a closed book. So I'll ask her, how was your day at school? And I get like the shrug and maybe two words, if that. So open-ended questions where I want to like find out, like, what are you looking at? How are you feeling? I mean, this is not, they don't go anywhere. They fall flat at best. So some of what Emily was describing about naming out loud some of the things that I'm seeing as I look at social media and some of the sort of normalizing the concerns that I have, like, oh gosh, on Instagram, everyone looks like they're living their best life, having such a great time. That really can't be true, can it? And so I know that my 12-year-old, even though she won't talk to me so much in an elaborate way, she's listening to what I have to say. And so, you know, using that move of naming the pulls I feel and speaking out loud about some of the questions I have and stresses can be really effective.
My older child is really an open book. And so, and, you know, I've had to, let me say that again. my older child is more of an open book. And that has meant that the way in which I digitally parent her is quite different. I can ask her a lot of open-ended questions and she's much more frank with me. I know that she will come to me if she faces thorny issues or dilemmas. She has many times. That has meant that sort of more intentional monitoring that I do for my younger child fell away earlier for Ella, my older child, because I knew that I didn't need to look over her shoulder in order to have her back, because I knew that she would come to me. I was on the lookout, you know, as we all are as parents, for any signs of stress or emotional strain. And I knew that if I asked her, she would 9 times out of 10 let me into what was happening. And so I calibrated my parenting of her, including her tech life, accordingly.
I love that, because, dear listener, what Carrie's speaking to is the quality of the relationship was strong enough, right? Too, that and her, that particular daughter is open enough that, but it speaks to the quality of relationship, which is important if you're, when your kids are young, to build those connections and listen to all those boring stories about My Little Ponies and whatnot, so that they'll actually talk to you about the important stuff later. We're going to get to some of the problems that the teens and are pointing out, that when you listen to them and hear about them. But I want to know about, like, you know, we get a lot of scary information, you know, we worry a lot. Are there benefits of technology benefits that we're overlooking that we should be paying attention to in this conversation?
Yes. So they vary a lot from one kid to another, and some kids are really tapping benefits of tech and others have much more of the sort of negative side of the equation. Like if we think of it like a seesaw, for some kids it really tilts toward the positive and some kids it really tilts toward the negative and some it's both are weighted. But some of the positives that we hear about that we know really matter are feeling socially connected and socially supported, really important in adolescence in general for kids' feelings of well-being, to feel connected and supported to by others. And there are kids and teens for whom actually like staying connected to cousins who live far away or to friends from summer camp, those are really important positives and they make teens feel like I'm getting closer with these people and I'm not as isolated. There are obviously ways that social media gives us the complete opposite experience in some cases and for some people. So that's not to overlook the ways it can lead us to feeling disconnected, but the social upsides can be extremely meaningful. And especially if you have a kid who is struggling to feel connected to friends in person, maybe they struggle with some anxiety socially and it's hard for them to build relationships. If they are using Discord or Snapchat or whatever it is to feel like they can express themselves and build those relationships, and you feel like that is a good thing, like you are right. Don't overlook that gut instinct. That can be really meaningful. We also have loved hearing from teens in our studies about the ways that they geek out about things that they're passionate about through their digital lives. And interests really vary. I mean, you talked about the example earlier of your daughter like investigating her goldfish tank. And I mean, I have so many stories like that top of mind of teens who were really into fixing cars and were like following all these Instagram accounts that taught them how to do car repairs or how to do a certain skateboarding trick. Or like, I'm thinking of a teen who was like, I'm secretly very into antiquing. And the list just goes on and on, like art techniques. And so I think that's another huge positive. I mean, developing interests and mastery around skills and interests is actually another really important contributor to self-esteem and to well-being. And many teens are using social media around that. Book Talk is another great example where teens are using TikTok to like source book recommendations and provide their own book reviews. So those are two big ones that come to mind for me. Carrie, what about for you?
Well, definitely, and this cuts both ways. It's a double-edged sword, but the opportunity to lean into civic and political interests that young people have. This has been a long time area of interest for Emily and me, which is how social media and young people's civic inclinations really intersect with one another, how they use social media to learn about certain causes and to speak out on things that they care about and even get involved in mobilizing people, setting up petitions or organizing rallies and using social media as a space to get people involved, even engaging in conversations. There is certainly, as I mentioned before, an underbelly to this. It can be really challenging, but we know that from talking to enough teens that there are enormous empowering upsides to using social media for civic purposes.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. So it's been crazy here in Delaware. Everything is blooming. It is so beautiful. But man, my allergies, it's throwing off the whole morning. And sometimes I sound really different. You might even hear it. Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Aspray is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray, and it delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. I used Astapro before I went for my run this morning, and I could breathe so well. It helped me enormously. No more itchy, no more drippy. It was great. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I mean, you know, as I've talked to some people about some things, dangers around tech and screen time, one of the things that, you know, that I've seen as a positive in my kid's life is not the civic thing, but my daughter keeping, you know, that friendship with her best friend who lives a half an hour away, and they've been friends since they're 18 months old, you know, and they play Minecraft together and talk the whole time, you know, in my mind, that's clearly a positive. They're doing something that's, you know, creative, that they're into, and they're doing it together. And often the little sister will kind of sit in on, and they all hang out, the three of them, because of this, the ability to do this because of the technology.
Absolutely. I mean, and my older daughter was a big Minecraft fan as well. And funny, she drifted back into it during the pandemic. She got really involved again. And what's so interesting, it's such a creative space. But what's really interesting about gaming is that it often becomes so much more than like the app or the game. It becomes a place where, you know, kids are connected, like your daughter and her friend. And they're often, you know, they're playing together, but they're probably on audio in some way, whether they're using Discord or using the phone to connect while they're on the phone, while they're on the computer playing a game. And they drift into talking about really meaningful things, like things that may be like stressing them out or upsetting them. We had one teen in our study talk about how he, connected with a whole bunch of gamers and set up this special dedicated Discord channel to just like talking about things that were on their minds that were hard and sharing advice for one another. And it started with gaming, but it became so much more.
That's so cool. Okay, so there's some benefits that we shouldn't overlook. What are the things we should be worrying about? And what are some of the dangers that maybe teens are hesitant to tell their parents about?
Well, we talked about habits, which is definitely a big one, helping around the pull of the screen and setting boundaries that really support healthy habits is a big one. Another thing that teens told us they really wish adults better understood that was a pain point is around the complexities of being a good friend in an age of social media. Many of us are alert to the idea that there is an adolescent mental health crisis in our country. And a hidden component of the reality that we have more teens struggling with anxiety and depression is that we also have teens who are not struggling, who are more likely than ever to have friends who are. And those friends are often struggling in public or semi-public ways on social media, maybe crying out for help or expressing their distress. And many teens are in this tricky position of having to figure out the boundaries around what it means to be a good friend when you see someone maybe in your peer group who's crying out for help or who's posting in a way that seems concerning. They also have to figure out, what should I do when I want to maybe disconnect at night for my own self-care, but I have a friend who's saying, I need you. And of course, developmentally, friendships are so important to adolescents. And one of the things that we really appreciated in hearing from teens is that adults might just say things like, oh, you're so addicted to your phone, or just you have such unhealthy tech habits. But teens sometimes feel like this pull between disconnecting for their own self-care and wanting to be there and be available for friends in need. And sometimes that need is a lowercase n. It's something that like isn't a real emergency, you know, like they're navigating some micro drama of their day and they just, you know, they want to be in it with their friends. But other times it's a real capital N need, and it's something that would be hard to manage at any stage of life. And it's even more so because it's really this burden of being a good supporter that's on very young shoulders.
Listening to teens. Oh, go ahead, Hunter.
I was just going to say, I don't think that's something that we think about so much as one of the challenges of tech, you know, and I really appreciate you bringing that up, this idea of like being a supportive friend, you know, and these are the channels in which kids are supporting each other.
We started to realize that there are so many ways that, you know, often there's this narrative that technology is undercutting empathy and it's making kids more narcissistic, less empathetic. And one of the things that was so interesting to us, and frankly, that challenged our own assumptions, was really confronting the reality that for empathetic teens, it is actually their empathy that is underlying some of the things that are hardest for them about navigating social media and figuring out how to set boundaries. And adults can probably relate to this on some level. Like if you have a friend who has been more needy than you feel comfortable with, or even a colleague or a boss who emails you and expects an immediate response, their norms can give you a sense that that response time is reasonable, is expected, and it can give a real sense of pressure on you. And you're an adult, so you can imagine how that's magnified for teens who care deeply about their friends and being a good friend, and also are still developing a lot of the strategies around how to communicate and set boundaries productively.
Tuning into that, that pain point around empathy and around really friendship dilemmas and that sense of pressure to stay connected to friends. You know, if a friend is, as Emily was describing, struggling with a mental health issue or just feeling like you need to stay connected in order to preserve the friendship and make sure that it doesn't fall apart. We heard these really powerful quotes from teens who felt like they couldn't step away, or their friends would, quote, find the dumbest excuse to cut you off. And, you know, that feeling of vulnerability and the importance of friendship at that age cannot be overstated. Some of this, especially around the tension about being there for a friend who's struggling versus disconnecting for self-care, really animated some of the work that we've done in building educational resources. So we've collaborated really closely with Common Sense Media, and they've developed a whole suite of resources for schools. And most recently, we worked with them on a couple of different resources that were key to particular dilemmas that we knew, we heard from teens in our research, they really struggle with. And so this dilemma around finding boundaries when you feel like you need to be there for a good friend, but you can't always be there, is really hard. And so we developed this thinking routine or this scaffold for teens to think about such scenarios. Figure out what they might want to do, how they might want to communicate with their friend that they care, but they need to disconnect, and actually practice some language for doing that, because that can be a big barrier. There can be the desire to set a boundary, but we know even as adults, like stepping up and actually saying what you need to say and saying it in a kind but clear way can be really tricky. And so we've designed some supports that we hope will help with that.
That's so cool. And where can people find that if they're interested?
They can find that on the Common Sense Media website. Happy to share a link that you can attach to this podcast.
Awesome. That sounds great. And for dear listener, Common Sense Media is a great resource if you aren't already using it for checking out your early 80s movies, early 90s movies before you watch them with your kids to remember.
Sounds like a lesson learned, Hunter.
Yeah, they do a great job with ratings and reviews, but they also offer so much more. And one of the something more pieces is this really incredible curriculum that Carrie and I have had an opportunity to work on that's totally free and available for schools and teachers. I think there are now over 70 or over 75 different lessons that really work on all different aspects of digital well-being, digital citizenship, media literacy, and developing the skills and dispositions to navigate life in a digital age.
That's great. Well, Emily and Carrie, your book, Behind Their Screens, goes into so much more that we don't have time to dive into today. Thinking about sexting and why people do that is one of the things that you might be interested in learning about, dear listener. There's so much in here. I really appreciate the nuance of this conversation, that you're offering us ways to work with this thing that is here to sort of stay in our lives, right? Like that we're not going to just, most of us aren't just going to run off to the woods and like turn off our internet, and we do kind of have to work with it. And I appreciate the complexity and the nuance of this conversation to kind of work with seeing the benefits as well as some of the challenges. And I just want to, give you a shout out for that nuance. Thank you.
Thank you, Hunter. I think Carrie and I feel so motivated to share this work and to tell the stories, because one of the big things that we came away with from this research was just a sense that actually our kids really want and need our help, and that parents often feel like if we don't understand all the details of the latest technology, we don't even know how to start. It feels so overwhelming. And I mean, Carrie and I have both been there. And also, we believe so deeply that you have wisdom that your kids want and need when it comes to figuring out how to navigate this landscape, and showing up for these conversations in a way that actually helps teens open up to you and that helps them get the support they need. It does require a pivot. We have to challenge some of our own assumptions and enter the conversations with a slightly different tone. Something really concrete that you can try this week is we often find that adults have this impulse to start conversations with what is hard or what's negative about technology. We ask questions like, is TikTok bad for your mental health, or is Instagram making us all really anxious, or why are you so addicted to your phone? A very simple pivot that you can try is actually starting with a question about what's positive or what kids like about technology. Really focus on trying to get a teen level view from your teen on why it is that they actually like using this stuff, when they like it, if they like it. So we ask questions like, can you tell me about some of the best parts about growing up with technology, or who are you following on whatever platform who makes you feel really inspired? When we signal to teens that we get that there are upsides to them and that there are positives, we can then move into the exact same conversation we were going to have about the negatives, but we do it with a totally different tone.
Yeah, I love that. That's incredible advice. I mean, yeah, we want to feel like we're seen and heard, and there's something to appreciate before we go into the difficult stuff. That's awesome. Thanks, Emily. Well, thank you guys both for this conversation. I appreciate it so much. Is there anything we missed at all that you want to leave the listener with besides that? I love that idea of the pivot in our attitude. I appreciate that.
Hunter, thank you so much for having us. And I mean, yes, there is more we want to share. And we hope that people will check out the book. We had so much fun writing this book and really revealing what teens want their parents to know about tech habits, about social comparison, about friendship dilemmas and group chats, about performative activism, sexting culture, digital footprints. So we hope that people will check out the book and that they will use it to feel inspired to have better and different conversations with the kids in their lives.
Well, thank you both so much. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know we had some tech issues, so you've taken double the time to come on the Mindful Mama podcast. So I appreciate it so much. Thank you. Well, I hope this episode helped you to breathe a sigh of relief. Those screens, it's such a challenging issue in this day and age. I know, I'm in it too. Hey, if you appreciated this episode, please do me a favor, share it on your Instagram stories and tag me in it at Mindful Mama Mentor. And you may as well follow me there and fill your feed with some mindful parenting inspiration. And I hope you're having a great week, my friend. I hope you're having some ease and peace and joy. I'm going to go for a walk with my daughter after this. I'm going to pull her outside and we're going for a walk. So yeah, let's go for some hikes with our kids if we can. Yeah, wishing you all those wonderful things this week. I can't wait to be back and connect with you again next Tuesday. And I hope you're well. Thanks so much for listening. Namaste.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof.
Bye.
See ya.
What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.